to Hero Hype. It's episode number 52. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, because this week we're talking about the big crossover event that happened last week. As always, I'm Danya, joined by my co-host Caitlin.
Hello.
And as always, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can do so by contacting us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast, or you can send us an email at herohypepodcast@gmail.com, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. But, hi Caitlin, how are you doing?
I am fantastic.
Good. That's right, let's get into it. So, no brief history this week. I feel like we're going to end up folding the one that I would have wanted to talk about into our discussion of the crossover, which was the Dominators, because they're pretty close to what we got in the comics, so I feel like we're gonna end up just naturally talking a little bit about their history anyway. So we're just going to get straight into our TV headlines, the first of which is that FX have set a release date for the X-Men TV series Legion, and have also premiered a trailer to go along with that as well. So Legion will be premiering on Wednesday, February 8th at 10 p.m, and that's Eastern time. So, yeah, that's going to come up pretty soon into the new year. We'll at least have a little bit of time after all of the other shows get back. I mean, when do most of the shows get back after Christmas break? It's usually end of January-ish, right? So then that's going to start about the same time as the rest of them, maybe a week or two later. So we're going to be busy watching all of these shows. Are you going to check this out?
I honestly don't know. The trailer is weird. It's on past my bedtime.
I mean, I don't have that problem because everything is a day later for me when I'm watching it. I'm going to check it out just because the trailers have got me really intrigued. I like all of the people that are going to be appearing in it. You know, you've got Dan Stevens, which if anyone was a fan of Downton Abbey, he was on Downton Abbey. You've got Aubrey Plaza, Rachel Keller, who else is in this? Bill Irwin, Jeremy Harris. There's loads of, like, really great people in here. So
I don't know who any of those people are.
Oh. Sadness. Yeah, the trailer is a little off the wall, but considering the fact that David Haller is, you know, he's a mutant. Yes, the dreaded M-word, which we can apparently say because this is technically a Fox show, so we'll actually be able to use the word mutant, even with Marvel involved in all of this. He is not initially assumed to be a mutant. He's assumed to be, like, schizophrenic. So he's diagnosed as a schizophrenic and is in and out of psychiatric hospitals. So it's going to be pretty interesting, to say the least, because it's going to be dealing with, you know, institutions and all sorts. So I think it's going to be a really interesting show to watch. And I'm definitely going to be checking it out.
I may give it a few episodes, but it's not at the top of my list. I have enough other things to be weird and off the wall, and sometimes it's just not what I need in my life.
I mean, it's also an X-Men TV show, so I'm also really curious how they deal with the sort of dynamics of the mutant stuff. When they've got a lot more time to address it, you know, what the relations are between mutants and humans and the politics behind it and the sort of tensions between, humans and mutants and all of that sort of stuff. I feel like a TV show is going to be a better medium for it because there's so much to cover. And it's not to say that the movies are always bad, but I feel like the scope of X-Men is so large and there are so many different characters and so many different kinds of powers that concentrating it into a movie doesn't always work. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they tackle that as a TV series, because they've got 13 episodes to explore all of this stuff, which is a huge amount of time compared to what they've had in the movies.
True, but not all the stories in the movies have been great at all, so I would hope if they're going to have a lot of extra time, they tell a good story with it. And I've been turned off with the last few.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping, because they've got the time to, like, really explore it and get into the characters and get into, like, the history and everything to do with X-Men, that it's going to, like, play out a bit better than the movies, because they can really dig into it and take their time. Whereas with the movies, there's so much you have to cram into it that I think it suffers for it a lot of the time. But yeah, we'll find out. February 8th, mark your calendars. Also, something to mark your calendars for. We knew it was coming, but Netflix have officially ordered a second season for Luke Cage. So, obviously, Daredevil has been renewed, Jessica Jones has been renewed, and Luke Cage is also getting a second season. When it's coming, we don't know. Probably looking at 2019. Next year, of course, we're seeing Iron Fist on March 17th, and the Defenders, we're assuming, we'll see at the end of the year. Daredevil Season 3, Jessica Jones Season 2, and the Punisher series will probably show up in 2018. So I can't imagine that they're going to be able to squeeze Luke Cage into anything coming up soon. So we know it's coming, but it's going to be in the distance. Not that he can't show up on any of the other shows. He's obviously got a connection with Jessica. He will have a connection with Matt and the rest of them when the Defenders premieres. So he'll probably pop up in some of the other shows. But are you excited that Luke Cage got a second season order?
I saw this headline and was like, this hasn't been announced already? I just assumed it already happened.
No, it wasn't officially ordered. It was basically everyone was assuming that it was going to get a second season. And they were basically like, yeah, we're probably going to order a second season. But nothing was completely official.
I should probably finish watching season one.
Have you not finished it yet?
No, I have like 4 episodes left.
So you... You've met Diamondback now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. See, and we'll get into it in detail at some point. We'll catch up on some of the standalone episodes. But for me, I felt like the first half of the season was a lot stronger in terms of an antagonist for Luke than the second half. So, not that I disliked the ending or anything like that, but I felt like, without spoiling anything, because just in case anyone hasn't had a chance to watch it yet, I feel like the two people that I was most invested in were Mariah and Cornell. Like, them as an opposing force for Luke, I thought was far more interesting than when we move into meeting Diamondback and going that way. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. I thought it was a very, very strong show. And it's so incredibly important for so many different reasons and so relevant to, like, right now. And it had so much to say. And for me, personally, I still preferred Jessica Jones over it. But that's mostly because it spoke very directly to me as an audience, but I loved Luke Cage a lot.
I've quite enjoyed what I've seen. I have no good excuse for not finishing it, just...
time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The only other little bit of, I'd say, TV news. It's not really TV, but it doesn't really class as a movie either, so I figured this would be the best place for it. Marvel and Funko have teamed up for the first ever Funko animated short, which there's going to be a couple of them. This one features Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Loki. And it's really super cute. It's basically Loki causing mischief as he does, and then Spider-Man and Iron Man trying to stop him. But it's basically in the style of the Funko Pop vinyls. There's no actual dialogue, so it's all like them moving around and sound effects, but it's really cute. Did you watch this?
I completely missed this. I had no idea it was a thing.
Yeah. There are more coming as well. So there are going to be others featuring like Rocket, Groot, The Collector, Deadpool, and Venom. They're all going to run about 90 seconds in length, so they're not going to be like super, super long. I think one of them is going to be called... the second one is being released December 7th. And it's going to be titled Bait and Switch, which is going to feature Rocket as he tries to break into the Collector's Museum to rescue Groot. And then the final one is going to be out on December the 14th and is called Chimichangas. And it's going to be about Deadpool fighting Venom, basically. So I love Funko Pop vinyls anyway, so these little animated shorts are really cute for me, as like little tie-ins to the figure line, because they're so adorable. Do you collect them?
Have you seen my bookshelf? Of course I collect them.
Oh yeah, I forgot, because you have them out of the boxes next to like the books and stuff.
Yes, I do.
Series that you do.
They're all hanging out on the shelf. I've, let me, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. I have 20.
Yeah, I'm looking. The ones that I've got in here, I've got a Newt Scamander that I got, which was the one that I got at San Diego Comic-Con where he has the briefcase. And then I've got my Thumbs Up BB-8 in here as well. My other ones currently are in my bedroom, but they're packed into a box right now because I am clearing out a load of stuff again. So I moved them out of the way while I was clearing up stuff so that I wouldn't damage them. Because you take them out of the box, I currently keep them in the box. I'm that collector.
Yeah, I don't leave things in the box, ever.
That's it, though, for TV. TV and TV adjacent headlines, I guess. So I guess we'll get into the crossover and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back.
And Supergirl, which no matter what they say, was not connected to
yeah,
the crossover.
That's very, very, very true. It was so loosely connected to the crossover, to the point where they showed the bit again in the Flash episode. Anyway, where do we want to start? Do we want to start with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., seeing as it's the least connected to everything?
Yeah, let's do our standalones, then do the crossover.
Okay, cool. So let's start with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So this picks up pretty much right where we left off in the episode we got a few weeks ago, because it's been on a, like, a mini break. So where we left off was Eli had gone, revealed his true colours and set off the machine, and then there was that mini explosion and Coulson, Fitz and Robbie disappeared. So we pick up pretty much right where that left off. So we get Mac and we get May walking around trying to figure out what happened, and they can't find Coulson, Fitz or Robbie. Like, they have no idea where they've gone. There's no sign of them. There's no actual sign of an explosion. It's just like a burst of energy. So they're kind of moving around trying to figure out what's going on. And one thing I really, really loved about this episode is that it played out that little bit with Mac and May to start with, to a point. Then it kind of like rewound and we got to see everything that just happened from Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie's perspective. And I actually really liked what they did with that. I thought it was quite interesting, especially when they were trying to interact with them, because they didn't realize that they were in, like the space between two worlds. So they were kind of caught in between two dimensions. So how do you feel, like, about that? How they kind of brought it back in and how they dealt with that?
I liked it the first time because it was a surprise, but they kept doing it and it just felt like it was wasting time in the episode, like, because they could have just condensed both, like, after the first time that we're like, oh, they've been there all along. Okay, now we know that they are there. It felt like wasted time to me, so I would have rather them have, like, smushed them together and just, like, seen both of them at the same time and just see the scenes play out once.
Yeah. I still think it was, like, a fairly neat little effect. I thought, like, humor-wise, some of the humor of it was quite good for me. Also, we got... It was a way of getting, like, reveals for some of the characters as well, like, knowing what the director was up to and where he sent Simmons and all of that stuff, so Fitz gets to find out about that, and obviously there's something going on with Coulson and May, because that ship seems to be sailing pretty damn hard in this episode. That wasn't just me, right?
I didn't even think about it, because Coulson is awful, and I'd like to think May has better taste than that.
I was getting huge Philinda vibes, because apparently that's the ship name. Someone has informed me that Philinda is the ship name for those guys, so I feel like that ship is starting to sail, because she was pretty distraught. Like, the way that she was reacting felt very much like a I haven't told him everything that I need to tell him kind of thing, with him being disappeared. But I don't know if that
was just... I did not read that at all.
No?
No.
Huh. See, I was getting that vibe, like, really heavily heavy-handed getting that vibe, especially with the drink as well. We need to get that drink thing. Maybe it's just me. Guys, what do you think? Do you think that it's, like, a Philinda thing? Like, hit us up on Twitter, because maybe it is just me. Maybe it's just random shipping goggles. Not that I necessarily ship them, because I hadn't considered it before, but I got that vibe. But anyway, so while they're in this other dimension, Robbie starts getting pains in his stomach, and then he starts getting really, really cold, and the Ghost Rider, like, basically recognizing that Robbie is not long for this world, because he's getting sucked down into this second dimension, basically jumps ship, and he jumps into Mac. And so, yeah, turns out that the reason that the Ghost Rider is able to kind of hold on to Mac is because he is suffering from some kind of grief. He has some kind of pain that he's suffering from that the Ghost Rider can kind of feed from in lieu of, like, pure revenge and vengeance, which is what tends to fuel him. So yeah, we got to see Mac take on the Ghost Rider as the host for a little bit. What did you think of Mac as the Ghost Rider?
He's definitely more intimidating than Robbie, because Robbie's like a shrimp compared to Mac.
Yeah. I was really digging, you know, when he gets on the bike with all, like, the leather jacket gear and all of that, I was just looking at it and just going, oh, hot damn. Like, that was very good. That was a very, very nice image. and I could stand to see a little more of that. But, yeah, he kind of goes and kicks ass and tries to hunt down Eli because Eli has gone AWOL after killing a load of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and escaping. So, obviously, the Ghost Rider is still out for vengeance and wanting to stop him, so they go after him. And Daisy manages to track him down as well. But while they're there, Robbie manages to kind of speak to the Ghost Rider between dimensions. So the Ghost Rider is able to see Robbie through both dimensions. And Robbie makes another deal with him to basically release Mac. And so Robbie's new deal is that if the Ghost Rider helps Robbie get vengeance and to hunt down his uncle and stop him, then Robbie will basically do everything that the Ghost Rider wants. Pretty much. So, yeah. That's a thing now. That's a new deal.
Yeah, that didn't seem super smart on Robbie's part.
No. I'm not sure that there's going to be any way out of that either. So he's going to be pretty much eternally tied to the Ghost Rider. Which, you know, in another way, he'll die once the Ghost Rider leaves him, right? Because he was dead.
I'm not entirely clear on how that worked.
Yeah. I don't know. So, there's that. Mac sort of comes back to himself and he clearly knows something more from his time with the Ghost Rider because when Robbie, like, shows back up properly, Mac kind of like confronts him almost, and Robbie is basically like, you want to settle my like final score together, which is going after Eli. And Mac looked like really dangerous. Like, he looked terrifying in that like final shot. So what do you think's going on there? Do you think he was privy to something while the Ghost Rider had hijacked his body? Or do you think that maybe something else has taken the Ghost Rider's place? Or, I don't know.
It felt to me like the pain that Mac has been feeling, because I got the impression it's, you know, the people that he's lost recently, the friends he's lost, like, he's pushed it down so much that now that it's kind of found an outlet, like, it's even worse. And so he's looking for some way to, you know, express it. And going after someone who needs killing, basically, is a good way to express that through violence. Can be his punching bag.
Yeah. So that's something that's gonna play out. The other thing that we found out in this episode is where Simmons went and what she was needed for. So Simmons arrives at this secret government base. I'm guessing it's a secret government base. She was kind of she had like a bag over her head, so she has no idea where she is. And what we find out is that someone has gone through Terrigenesis and is still in the cocoon and has been in the cocoon for 7 months. So whoever this is as well, it's clearly someone important because of the government facility holding him. Simmons didn't seem to recognize him when she eventually got him out of the cocoon. And the reason that he was still stuck in there, I guess, was because he was quite scared. That was the feeling I got, is that he was too afraid to come out of the cocoon, so he stayed in the cocoon. So she had to coax him out. I feel that was the vibe that I got from it, but I'm not sure if that's entirely true.
So was this the same cocoon that we saw in the chick's house who's blackmailing the new director? Because she was like, she was leaving and she like turned on the television for some cocoon, for like a Terra Genesis cocoon that was like in her living room. So I'm, and she seemed, I think she's like a government person, so I'm wondering if like that's what that was, and she's using her position to help her brother, if that's who he is or something.
Yeah, I don't, I have no idea. I guess we'll, I was going to say, we'll find out over the next couple of episodes, but we've got one more episode and then it's on a break again. So I guess we'll discover more when it comes back after the Christmas break, unless they put something huge in the mid-season finale. Yeah, so he's mostly out of the cocoon now regardless. And the other thing that happened in this episode is that while Fitz and Coulson and Robbie were stuck in this in-between dimension kind of thing, they needed to find a way to get them back out. So May takes the Darkhold book and is basically trying to get someone to read it. Anyone to read it. She'll read it. Whoever. But they eventually decide on giving the book to Ada, who is obviously an AI. So she, the whole thing is that humans can't deal with reading the book. They can't take in that amount of information. They can't handle that sort of knowledge. So they give the book to Ada because she's an AI, and therefore she doesn't have the same limitations that the human brain has. And if anything goes wrong, they can just reboot her. So she now has the knowledge of the Darkhold and manages to breach between the dimensions and get Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie to come back through. However, this seems to be a terrible decision to have made, because in the short term, it got them back. But now we have an AI with untold intelligence and knowledge and power at her fingertips. And
she, what was with that brain she was making?
No, yeah, she does this thing with like a, she makes a brain at the end. I don't know what the hell is going on, but I feel like her having that knowledge is like bad news with a capital B and a capital N.
Yeah, because she was able to process all of it. So,
yeah.
Can this thing like corrupt her programming or something?
Who knows? But I feel like it's just not going to end well for anyone.
No, AI plots never go well. No. And so they found a way to make it not go well.
Yes, they have. So she now has untold powers. And I feel like rebooting her is not going to be an option.
She's going to pull like a 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah, that's going to be super creepy. She's already super creepy anyway to me, but now it's going to be even creepier because she has God knows what knowledge and what she can do. Ugh. This is going to come back and bite them in the ass. But
yes.
This episode pretty much started bringing all of the storylines, all of the different storylines together, essentially. So everything that had been happening that was very separate is now all together in one storyline. So I feel like now that they've converged, we'll sort of carry on one track from this point forward. So I feel like that's going to be a little neater for me.
We shall see.
Yeah. But that was pretty much it for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Alright, so let's talk about Supergirl, because even though the CW was like, it's a 4-night crossover. No, it was a 3-night crossover. This was Supergirl's mid-season finale, and it was a completely self-contained story, except for the little breaches that Cisco was trying to make, and that's explained in like 3 seconds. So
yeah.
So this story, or this episode, focuses on, at the end of the previous episode, we saw Cyborg Superman in the Fortress of Solitude wanting to find out about Project Medusa. It turns out Project Medusa is a Kryptonian-created chemical agent, bio-agent, that's going to kill all the aliens except Kryptonians, basically. And Cadmus is going to use this to wipe out all the aliens on Earth. And Kara, because she hasn't had enough issues with finding out her family isn't perfect, finds out that her father, Zor-El, was the one who made it. So yes. Season one was very much about her mother and her aunt and finding out, you know, these women she idealized were not perfect. And now it's her father who is not perfect. So it's kind of sad for her to be realizing all these things that she thought about her parents, the way she idealized them, are just, they're not true. And she has no way to, like, have them answer for it, basically. No. Because they're dead.
Yeah. There was a really nice line as well, where she's, like, really conflicted and confused and very upset about, like, her parents' legacy. Like, her father's legacy and her mother's legacy. And she's like, what? This is what their legacy is. This is what they've done. And how am I supposed to live with that? And Jean is basically like, your parents' legacy is not what they did. Your parents' legacy is you and what you choose to do.
Yeah, that was really sweet.
And I was like, wow, that is such a beautiful moment between those characters as well. Just, I loved it. I loved that moment so much. And I feel like that's so true of it as well. Like, she's having to face up to the fact that her parents aren't this idealized version that she saw through a child's eyes. She was very innocent and very young at the point that she left Krypton. So she definitely idolized her parents the way that a lot of us do when we're that young. And so finding out what they stood for and what they did when she's an adult and basically flying in the face of that a little bit and doing what she believes is right and just and true. Like, that's so much of who she is. And I guess trying to, like, bring them down off this pedestal that she's put them up on as well. And I feel like as well, that's gonna help her even more with this prejudice that she still has, a little bit of prejudice against Daxamites. To an extent. So I feel like that kind of holier-than-thou attitude about Kryptonians and what they stood for, it kind of brings her back down to almost a human level. That she's not perfect and no one is perfect. They have flaws and they have things that they've done that, you know, maybe with the ideals that she's been raised with on Earth, she doesn't agree with. So it's just really interesting what they're doing with that whole storyline with family and found family and, you know, adopted family and all of that sort of thing. And I just, everything is so interesting how they weave family in and out of it. So blood versus everything else.
Yeah, and it's a natural process for all of us as we get older to realize our parents are human or, you know, are flawed or not perfect, but for Kara, her situation is unique because her parents have no way to, like, defend themselves, basically.
Yeah.
Like, they're, all she has is, like, her memories of them and then things she hears from other people about them. And so it's all kind of secondhand. So she has to go through a very complicated process, kind of dealing with her relationship with her parents, which it's interesting. All right, so Cadmus wants to wipe out all the aliens, and as we found out, the head of Cadmus is Lillian Luther, and Kara and the rest of the DEO decide they need to find out whether Lena is aware of what her mother's up to. So Kara goes around sniffing for information. It's not super subtle, but she tries. but I think the most telling part is Lena calls her mother after Kara, like, tries to interview her about her mother. And, like, there's this really just sad conversation where Lillian's basically like, well, yeah, I loved Lex more than you. Like,
yeah.
And then the saddest line is when Lena says, like, well, I know you're lying because you said it. You loved me. And we both know that's not true. Like, oh, that girl is, she has it rough as a, in what she was dealing with. But she comes out, she becomes central to the whole Cadmus plot because Supergirl eventually comes to her and is like, you know, your mother is in charge of Cadmus, and she needs this thing that your company makes to launch this bomb that's going to kill all these aliens. And Lena seems really angry and kicks Kara out and seems like she's joined her mother. Did you think she had joined her mother's side at this point?
I did not. And the only reason I thought not was because earlier in the season when we were introduced to her, when there was those attempts being made on her life, she made almost an identical play, like a double cross play with being able to use people to lure who she needed to a specific point so that she could get the upper hand and basically take them out herself. So I thought it was a riff on that storyline because we'd seen her do it before.
I didn't think she was until she like hit the button that set it off, and then I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
But then it turns out she made the whole virus inert, and she called the cops on her mom. So Lillian Luther has been arrested. Lena gets to be the big damn hero of the whole thing, which is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So props for Lena.
I love her so much. And I feel like this might be a problem, that I'm loving her as much as I am, because I feel like it's going to all come crashing down around me, but I really do want her to be, I guess, the Luther that's the good one. And I really want her to step outside of that legacy. So I'm cautiously optimistic that they will continue to do great things with Lena, but I'm also worried.
I continue holding her at arm's length just because I find something just slightly off about her. Like,
did you watch Merlin?
Like a season and a half of it.
I was going to say, because Katie McGraw, her character in Merlin, like, I feel like some of my suspicion is colored slightly by the role that she played in Merlin.
I've seen all the GIFs of that. But my suspicions are tainted by the whole alien detecting thing that she has, which continues to really rub me the wrong way and tells me something very uncomfortable about Lena's beliefs.
Yeah.
So while I want to like her, I'm just kind of waiting for her, what feels like inevitable downfall. Like, she's going to feel betrayed by Supergirl at some point and follow Lex's path or something.
No, I don't want that because I love them as friends and I think it's so great. One Luther, one good Luther. Come on, you've given us two bad Luthers already. So one good Luther. There's got to be a balance. And she's technically not a Luther by blood. So it can't be something in their genes that makes them terrible.
Well, if it's, you know, a story that's like where there's a sense of betrayal or something.
Oh, no.
I don't know. And it's not even completely that she's a Luther. It's just like there is something just not slightly off about her to me.
Yeah.
And the whole alien detection device, like, I can't quite get past that.
Yeah.
So I am continuing to hold her at arm's length. But I thought she was really great in this episode.
Yeah, me too.
Also great in this episode is Alex. This is pretty much a great episode for her because she doesn't actually get to come out to her mom because she's too afraid to. And then her mom basically figures it out and is completely supportive. And it's a really sweet moment.
It is. I love the whole initial, like, Thanksgiving scene where, like, Wynn and James are wanting to tell Kara that Wynn and James are working together as, like, guardian and all of that. And Alex is like, no, you're not. You are not telling her at Thanksgiving. This is not your moment. I have a thing that I need to say to everyone, and you don't get to, you don't get to say that you've been running around in your costume doing all of your stuff. I loved that she was basically like, no, what I have to say is important.
And we had drunk Alex again.
Yeah. No, it was awesome. Amazing. But yeah, I will say, of note, it's kind of cool that Wynn and James are basically at the point where they're like, maybe we should tell Kara.
Yeah, I feel like the intention was never to keep it completely for a secret from her. I think they just knew she wasn't going to approve initially, so they wanted to kind of just get started and show that they could do good.
Yeah.
And then if they had already done that a few times and had been like, look, James can handle himself. Wynn is helping him. Like, you can't just say, no, you're going to get yourself killed because look how much he's already done.
Yeah. But it's good because I don't like when secrets like that are kept from people who really need to know that information in order to make informed decisions about people's safety and everything to do with it. So it's good that I feel like this is an indicator that we are going to get that reveal to Kara sooner rather than later. But they didn't get to do it this episode. And Alex didn't get to come out at dinner.
Nope. But Alex does get the girl.
She does.
Because Maggie gets shot and Alex ends up stitching her up. And they have this sweet conversation where Alex says that, you know, she figured out that she didn't come out just for Maggie. That she is really happy with who she is now. She feels comfortable and she kind of finally understands who she is. And this kind of gets Maggie to realize, you know, it wasn't just an infatuation thing that had Alex coming out. So that makes her a little more comfortable pursuing her. So she goes to Alex's place and basically says, we should all kiss the girls that we want to kiss. And they kiss, and it's really cute.
And it is really cute.
And I love like, that.
Oh, it was such a sweet moment. I loved it.
I love when Maggie was like, are you going to get crazy on me now? She's like, yeah, pretty much.
Oh.
It was really cute. I think they're such a good couple because they push each other. And both are such exceptional women that they need someone as equally exceptional to be an equal partner. And they're going to call each other on their crap and they're going to be supportive of each other. And they understand what each other does professionally. Like, they are a really good fit for each other.
Yeah, there's not going to be any hiding or secrets or trying to brush stuff under the carpet or trying to, like, like, so Alex keeping, like, what she really does for work a secret and all of that sort of stuff. So I think that's really great that they are pretty much starting everything on equal terms.
All right, and speaking of romantic feelings, we also have Kara discovering that Mon-El has feelings for her. And I have a hard time reading her. In this episode, I wrote in my recap that it reminds me a little of how she reacted to Wynn, in just that it's like something she had never even considered.
Yeah.
But with Wynn, she pretty quickly shuts him down. And with Mon-El, she doesn't. Which,
yeah.
I've made my feelings about a potential relationship between them clear. I'm not here for it, but we'll see.
See, I wouldn't dislike, and I've said it before as well, I wouldn't dislike a relationship between them, but right now it feels so much like it. I know it's probably not their intention, and this isn't exactly what they were going for, but basically it feels like they're just replacing the interracial relationship with two white people. And that's kind of a little awkward for me, because I feel like James and Kara, like, they did have chemistry, and they did have a really great relationship, and there was an attraction there. And Kara's decision to break up with him isn't necessarily because she doesn't have feelings for him, it was because she really felt like she needed to focus on a few aspects of her life first, and she couldn't give the time to every single aspect. And she didn't want that to affect their friendship and basically damage that beyond repair. So, and I know, we know as an audience behind the scenes that the writers just couldn't make James and Kara work because they just felt like they'd put them together for the sake of putting them together. But then again, these guys, they've never been great at writing romances anyway. I feel like Alex and Maggie's is the exception to the rule here, that it's working as well as it is, because most other relationships in the Arrowverse are not written particularly well. So, I don't know. It makes me feel really awkward. And that's not to say that I don't like Mon-El, because I do. I'm getting horrifically attached to him really, really quickly. And I do like his interactions with Kara. In fact, I like his interactions with everyone. But I don't feel like a relationship between the two of them is right for right now.
Yeah, I feel like it's just, I don't know, Mon-El is bland to me, and James is very interesting. And if Kara isn't going to be in a relationship with James, it makes more sense for her to not be dealing with a relationship at all. And they might not go there at all, because Kara definitely was kind of uncomfortable mm-hmm. with finding out about this. So I don't know. I just had a hard time reading her, and she was very quick to shut Wynn down when she found out he had feelings for her.
Yeah, I almost get the feeling, though, that if Mon-El had given an indication... So, obviously, guys, if you watched the episode, you know Mon-El was inflicted with the virus and was in a critical condition, and he kissed her when he thought he was gonna die, and then he gets cured and comes back and basically pretends he doesn't remember anything that happened when he clearly does remember what happened. I feel like if Kara had an indication that Mon-El remembered what happened, that she probably would have put a stop to it. But because Mon-El made it seem like he didn't remember what had happened, he couldn't remember anything while he was inflicted with the virus, she felt like it was an easier way out to be like, oh no, nothing, you drooled, kind of thing. So, yeah. I feel like if she had to, she would have, but I feel like she didn't want to bring it up if she felt like he didn't remember what he did.
But he has that, of course, has this longing look after her.
Oh, yeah. He remembers.
That's not going away.
No. So it'll be interesting to see what they do, because obviously he is going to eventually tell her. I mean, it's Mon-El. He's going to be upfront about it at some point. And I guess Kara's reaction at that point will be very, very telling.
Yes, but we shall see.
Yeah. Oh, we did learn that there are people searching for Mon-El as well.
Yes, which clearly means that he was the prince in his story, yeah. And he was BSing.
Yeah, he's I know you find him bland, but I actually really like Mon-El a lot. I like everyone at the moment.
I don't dislike him. He's just, like, kind of towards the bottom of my favorites in terms of who's getting screen time.
Just like everyone. I'm still, like, the bar bit where he went out drinking with Wynn is still, like, my favorite thing.
See, I would be totally into it if there was, like, a Wynn-Mon-El relationship. Like, I would be here for that.
I would be super into that as well. Damn it, Supergirl, why is that not a thing? Make it a thing.
But yeah, so I'm guessing that'll play into what's going on in the second half. They did say after the crossover that the Dominators would be appearing in the second half of the Supergirl season.
Which so, I guess if they've paid for all of that CG, they want to make the most out of it. Yeah. They've got the models already made.
Yeah, but we know from the comics that the Daxamites were part of the invasion group, so I wonder if there'll be any tie in there at all. Or if it'll just be completely separate. Who knows?
Yeah, that'll be quite interesting.
Yeah, but last point from the Supergirl episode, we see Jean still struggling with the whole becoming a white Martian thing, and then is pretty conveniently cured by the end of the episode, which yeah. I was expecting that to last a bit longer. But I guess they were more interested in telling the story of Jean and McGann, and they needed this conflict to bring the truth about McGann out.
Yeah, and I also feel like it was very much hinted that once he fully turned into a white Martian, that was it. Like, there was going to be no reversing that at all, whereas when he's still in, like, this hybrid sort of state, that there was a chance to reverse it if they could figure it out. Because it was basically replacing his entire genetic makeup.
So, I just figured the transformation was going to take at least one or two more episodes before they dealt with it. But these shows always deal with things faster than I think they will. So, so Jean is cured, Mon-El gets cured, Alex has the girl, Lena has a badass episode. It was overall quite enjoyable. And the end of the episode saw Barry and Sisko showing up in her apartment, but if you want to call that part of the crossover, because literally that scene is also in The Flash.
Yeah, it's a stretch to say that Supergirl was part of the crossover. She was obviously part of the crossover in that she appeared in the other shows, but the Supergirl episode, that's stretching it just a little bit. It's part of the crossover on a technicality.
And I mean, a friend brought this up to me, but he was like, why didn't they also bring Jean over? Because one friendly alien is good, two friendly aliens would be better.
Yeah, I mean, it would have made sense that they would have brought a couple of people to help with the fight. And I don't know. And also, like, if they knew that the Dominators were such, like, a huge force, it probably would have been Superman. Superman, do you want to come?
That could have been helpful, too.
Yeah, alien road trip.
But then again, Supergirl, well, we'll just talk about the crossover. So we're just going to cover the entire crossover as one discussion, since it's one story. Well, sort of one story. There was Arrow in there. But, so I felt like the biggest, well, I didn't love the crossover as much as I wanted to. I'll start with that. I was kind of disappointed by the first two parts, and I didn't want to be. I thought the Legends part was far and away the best episode, but it very clearly needed the Arrow episode to expand the story because the Dominators retreat very quickly.
Yeah, it was conveniently fast that they retreat. And I'll agree with you. I didn't dislike the crossover. I feel like it had its highlights and it had some great moments in it. And I did enjoy it to a point, but it felt very rushed. And I think that's a lot down to the fact that they didn't utilize Supergirl as part of the crossover as much as they could have, as in the episode, not the character. And so,
but the character too.
Yeah. But The Flash had to spend all of its time setting it up. Then, once we had the setup, we moved into Arrow, and Arrow basically didn't spend any time on the Dominators at all. And I understand that this was also its 100th episodes. They really wanted to do something that honored that and did something to celebrate the fact that they've reached 100 episodes. But also it's the middle of the crossover and we're meeting a huge opposing force against these guys for the first time. And it just, we lost an hour of really good development time for the crossover by celebrating the 100th. And I don't begrudge them that, because 100 episodes is a huge milestone and it deserves to be celebrated. And I did really like the episode as a 100th episode celebration. But I feel like it did a bit of a disservice to the crossover because it didn't really lend anything to it. And I love the Legends of Tomorrow episode.
Yeah, I think my recap title for Arrow was like a solid 100th but weak crossover installment. And because, you know, this was not the type of plot that could only happen with the Dominators. Like, Oliver could have gotten dosed by, like, a drug or something and then had the same thing happen.
Yeah.
Like, there was no reason that this story, if they wanted to tell this whole It's a Wonderful Life story with Oliver, had to be in the middle of the crossover. I think it was, they knew that this milestone was coming and they should have done a better job scheduling it. They should have put the crossover like a week before or something. Like, it was not
after the midseason.
Or after, yeah. So it was just, in scheduling it the way they did, fully aware that the 100th episode would be part of it, they did a disservice to the crossover as a whole. And I think they should have included Supergirl as well and used some of that space to expand, because I felt like the Flash, for as much as it was set up, moved too fast. Like, it was, yeah. But like, it was like, here's one group, here's another group, here's another. Okay, let's go. Like, it was so fast that it skipped over some moments that could have had some real emotional resonance, like Barry finding out about Leonard.
Yes, that was such a huge disappointment to me, because Barry had such faith in Leonard as a person and really did push him to be better. And so they had this really strange little connection that was a lot of times quite touching as well. And I feel like that dynamic between the two of them was always pretty great. And I always loved their interactions on The Flash. I thought they interacted really, really well together. So the fact that he finds out that he's died and died a hero, like, it was almost like a non-reaction when I would have expected. And fair enough, it's the middle of what is an alien invasion. So, you know, a lot of the time you don't really have the luxury of being able to react to that or even grieve a little bit because, you know, aliens. But also, I feel like that moment deserved a little bit more breathing room.
If we can spend as much time as we did on the fight between Barry and Sisko, we can spend a little bit more time with Barry dealing with that revelation.
Yeah.
You know, that was just, like, one example. Like, there were, and it felt like, you know, there were these moments that could have had more emotional resonance, and they had to move too quickly because they had so little space to, you know, put everything that they needed in. And I would have liked to have seen even more of some of these weird character combinations interacting. Like, we got a few, but for all the characters that we have, there were way more combinations that we could have seen had they spent more time, like, expanding the whole thing. If we had gotten Supergirl, or even like half of Supergirl to set it up, and they had used the Arrow episode to continue it, they could have let the whole thing breathe. They could have done more with like the government involvement. Like, Lila disappeared after the first episode. Like, she was talking to the president and then she's gone. Like, you know.
She's pretty hugely involved in the first episode, like, and you would expect that considering her role and her job. Like, you would expect her to be quite heavily involved in an alien invasion. So the fact that she is as involved as she is in the first episode and then disappears is really weird. You would have expected her to have, especially when most of the team is abducted at the end of the first episode dealing with this, that she would be like, why have they abducted these specific people? Like, that's not cool. And be investigating it alongside everyone because, you know, big deal.
Yeah, so it just felt like they had way more story to tell, and because of the way they structured it, they did not give themselves enough room to tell it. And I felt like Legends was far and away the most satisfying part because they just made it the team up that we were promised that the whole thing would be.
Yeah, and they dealt with, you know, what the Dominators wanted, their motivations, the kind of emotional resonance a little bit that I'd been expecting from some of the rest of the episodes. They got some weird team-ups. And yeah, it was just pretty good all around. And so I feel like that would have been infinitely more satisfying had they spent more time on the rest of the story through the previous two episodes. So,
and yes.
Three. Technically, if you also count Supergirl.
Which I don't. yeah, I agree. All of that is not to say I didn't have a lot of fun, for the most part, because it was, in many ways, very fun, but I feel like they could have done it better, and they have the capabilities. They have proven, with their track record, that they could have done this better than they did it.
Yeah. No, I'll agree with that. I really, really will. And, you know, I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the whole crossover. I did. I thought it had some really great moments. And I did really enjoy Arrow's 100th episode as well. But I almost class it as, like, a standalone episode. So, on the whole, I enjoyed it. I just feel like there were aspects of it that could have done so much better. But it was really cool actually seeing Supergirl, how Supergirl works in that on their Earth in terms of her powers, because they haven't really ever had to deal with someone with Supergirl's powers before on their Earth. So yeah, that was quite interesting.
Though it felt to me like for all the effort they went to bring her in, she was sidelined quite a bit. Like, it was like the writers didn't really want to rely too much on her, but, like, that's why they brought her in, because they needed someone with her abilities to help them fight an entire alien army.
Yeah.
Like, the whole Oliver thing of, like, I just can't fight with you, so you just need to not fight. Like, A, that makes no sense for who Oliver is as a character, because he's usually fairly pragmatic about what they need to deal with a situation.
Even if he's slightly uncomfortable with it himself.
He will deal with it. Like, you know, these aliens might destroy the world. I can put my issues with like being confused about what's going on in the world aside until the evil aliens are gone. Then I'll deal with it. He's usually fairly good about that. So that did not feel true to his character. It felt like an excuse to just sideline her.
Yeah. Because she is ridiculously overpowered compared to everyone else. It's very well established that there's no one even close to being in her league. And also, I feel like they've set up a problem now. And not necessarily a problem, I don't know the right word for it, but basically they've given Supergirl the device for her to be able to come back to their Earth whenever she wants to or whenever she's needed. And I feel like, in some respects, that's now created a huge question mark over all of the plots. Because, for example, when things with Savitar and Alchemy are getting out of control. And likewise, on Arrow, when everything with Arrow is getting out of control on their side as well, why don't they just send out the beacon to Supergirl to be like, hey, this is, like, way beyond us and the collateral damage, like, is getting to the point where it's uncontrollable? Can you come help?
I mean, that's true of, like, the other heroes in the Arrowverse, too. Like, Oliver and company are dealing with someone Oliver that they're struggling with. Their, as Cisco says in the episode, like, why don't they just be like, hey, Barry, can you be here in 5 seconds and help us? Because it takes him, like, no time to get there. Like, that's the issue of the shared universe of, like, you know, in the normal world, we would just say, hey, Flash, can you flash on over here and take care of this? That'd be great.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. It's just even more, I feel like even more so now with Supergirl, knowing that, like, knowing what her power is and that she is pretty much the ace up their sleeve. Like, you can also reasonably assume that, like, with Barry having to be so focused on what's going on with, like, Savitar and Alchemy and all of that, that he doesn't maybe have the time to also dedicate to what's going on with Team Arrow. Because, you know, Savitar is, like, pretty much on the level of a god in terms of that, its powers. So I could buy to an extent the fact that the Flash has a huge opposing force that needs his undivided attention. But with Supergirl, yeah, Cadmus was a thing, but for the most part, she's got Monsters of the Week that, you know, Guardian and the DEO are actually also capable of dealing with. So I don't know. It sets up an interesting question mark over everything of, like, now that this universe really truly is shared and they are able to, like, move people around within it as well to get resources from other Earths and so on and assistance from other Earths, like, how does that impact the rest of the shows?
I mean, the plot of the Flash mid-season finale is that Barry goes to get Jay Garrick for help. Like, so they're already jumping Earths to get help.
Yeah, which to me, that's good. Like, that they've got these resources, like, use them. You're introducing them, so use
exactly.
them.
Exactly. So, you know, like, they needed, like, a line that said, you know, there are risks from this, or it needs, like, only a couple jumps and it needs to be recharged and it's really difficult to do that or something, like, yeah, a reason that she can't use it to jump over to Earth One every weekend and have fun with Barry, or that whatever.
Have,
you know,
fun with Barry. Yeah.
And company. I mean, then again, you know, I could ship that too, because they're adorable puppies, but
can we make it an OT3, Kara, oh my God, Iris, and Barry.
Speaking of things that were left on the cutting room floor, apparently there was originally a line where Sarah was, like, saying to Kara that, you know, we should get a drink after this, and Kara's like, you need to meet my sister. And now I really want Sarah and Alex to meet.
Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting, but...
But yeah, so let's talk about the Arrow 100th, like, as a 100th episode, not necessarily as a crossover piece, but as a 100th episode, how did you feel about how they kind of honored the episodes that came before?
I thought it was really well done. Like, I really enjoyed it. It was so strange seeing everyone back and almost what could have been had, I guess, Oliver not got on the Queen's Gambit, and had he not had his affair with Sarah and all of that stuff. Like, it was a very, very interesting episode. I thought there were some hilarious moments, like them being like, oh yeah, who'd have ever thought that Tommy would become a doctor in Chicago? And it's like, ah! Brilliant. No, on the whole, I was actually really impressed with it as a 100th episode. It was a solid celebration episode. I just don't think it suited being in the middle of a giant crossover.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very interesting that, you know, Oliver's fantasy life is getting married to Laurel.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they were never going to work on the show because of the baggage of the Queen's Gambit. So without the Gambit, they kind of lose that baggage.
Yeah.
Which means that they could, if Oliver shaped up, which he does in the dream world, like, they could be a functional couple.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really good what if.
Yeah, and it was really sad seeing, you know, Sarah have to say goodbye to Laurel again, and that was...
Saying goodbye to Laurel, saying goodbye to Moira.
Oh, my heart. That scene where Oliver says goodbye to his parents is really sad.
It is. It was heartbreaking. It was horrible. And also for Thea as well, who was aware of the fact that this wasn't... Like, she figured out pretty quickly that this... That the world that they were living in wasn't real. Like, she figured it out, I think, before everyone else, that it wasn't their world, it wasn't real. But she was like, but this is better than what we've got, and I like it here, and I want to stay. Like, this is... You know, everyone's alive, everything's good. Everything is as it could and should have been, and I want to stay. And that was really heartbreaking as well.
Yeah, that I wasn't sure what they were gonna do with Thea, like, if, like, she would decide to stay and then, like, would be forcibly removed from the hallucination and would be angry or something, but I'm glad she made the choice to come back.
Yeah, me too.
And that wasn't forced on her.
No. Because I think that would have build up more resentment, or would have taken her back to a place of being very resentful. And yeah. I feel like they don't... Oliver and Thea, when it comes to family, they only have... When it comes to blood family, they only have each other now. So I feel like that relationship is really strong because of that. And so I don't feel like they should get back to a place where they're resentful of each other or falling out, because I don't know, I just like the way that their relationship is right now when they're working together.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're in a good place with each other right now. Like, Oliver is very understanding of Thea retiring, basically, and
except she comes out of retirement because she's like aliens.
Yeah. And then she doesn't get to be involved in the final battle. Like,
yeah.
That was kind of disappointing for Thea. But yeah, so I liked also that the way that they got out of the dream world was basically each of the five had to fight the representation of, like, what was the most painful for them. So, you know, Oliver fought Deathstroke, Sarah fought Damien Dark, Thea fought Malcolm, Ray fought Amira Kuru Soldier, and Diggle fought Andy. Like... Yeah. I thought that was well done, because each one has a different villain that has caused the most pain for them. And so they were able to pit them against that. And I thought that was powerful too.
Yeah, I really liked that as well. There were a lot of moments just across this episode that were like, this is really well done. I'm just frustrated that it landed where it did.
Yeah, I think for me, what the best part is that it is a reminder that the people who make the show really do love the show, that for as much as we complain about it at a lot of times and talk about all these things that they're doing wrong, like, this was very much a labor of love. And they, like, it's very clear that the people who make the show, from the writers to the actors, you know, are very invested in it. And that was a good reminder.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so now that the invasion is over, what do we think of the potential consequences might be? Like, they left very quickly. Are they going to come back?
I think it leaves enough room for them to come back. I feel like they have to regroup and come up with a better strategy to counteract the metahumans, because obviously the bomb was the meta bomb was, you know, something that would remove all of their powers, but also it's kind of like, well, the way that they deployed it meant that it didn't necessarily work the way that they wanted, so they need a better plan, but it definitely leaves it open for them to return. So I would not be shocked if we saw them again.
Yeah, I think they said afterwards, like, they left the door open, but it might be a few seasons sort of thing. They don't want to just, like, rehash it in the next crossover kind of thing. I did like that they kept the motivations of the Dominators pretty much the same from the comics, which is that the aliens are afraid of the threat that metahumans represent. Yeah. And the bomb is straight out of the comics. Yeah. That they're going to drop a bomb that makes the metagene inert, basically. And this in the comics was where they introduced the idea of metahumans in the first place. So for as much as we're throwing around the idea of metahumans, this comic run is the first time they ever introduced that idea. So it's very significant in that way. In the comic run, they were there just for, they wanted all of the heroes to be turned over. It wasn't specifically Barry, but I don't think they were actually, like, I think they were making Barry the face of it.
Yeah.
But once, like, they turned Barry over, they may, like, leave a little bit, then come back or something, or be like, that was nice. Okay, how about the rest of them now?
Yeah.
Sort of, like, because they came in the 50s. To get information, like, that was long before Barry was ever born and went back in time. So, you know, they were concerned about it long before Barry went back in time.
Yes.
So their concern is going to remain.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting the way they tied it into Flashpoint. Wow, Barry is really never going to live this down.
No, he's really, really, really not. Though, we did at least get a resolution to the Cisco and Barry situation. Because it's, okay, I am fine, like, and it's understandable that Cisco is mad as hell at Barry. Because, you know, even though Barry didn't kill Dante, the consequences of his actions of creating another timeline led to Dante's death. And we don't know that Dante wouldn't have died in the other timeline either, but all they know with certainty is that creating Flashpoint meant that Dante died. So I get that Cisco is mad at him, but it felt very much overkill at times through the crossover. Like, they spent a lot of time on it, to the point where it was, like, getting grating rather than being, rather than having an impact. But then we got a really interesting resolution to it in that Cisco actually created a change in the timeline himself by accident. So
yeah,
he saw
exactly
how easily it can happen.
I mean, I wasn't really bothered by Cisco's anger. Like, I thought that was one of the most interesting things they did coming out of Flashpoint, because it wasn't just that Dante died, it's that Barry did this selfish thing, thinking only of himself, not of the consequences of others.
Yeah.
And that Dante's death was sort of this incidental result when Barry is going back to save his own family. So that not only that his brother is dead, but that the person he considered his best friend did something so selfish that it somehow led to his brother's death. Yeah. And that in the world that they originally came from, his brother was not dead.
Yeah, I just felt like it was in Cisco's, like, passive-aggressive silence at points, and when it was focused on, but it wasn't, like, every 2 seconds, it felt like. I felt like it had more impact when they used it sparingly, whereas I feel like they put a lot of focus on it during the crossover.
And I guess I would defend Sisko in that he's not the one who kept bringing it up. Like, other people kept bringing it up to him.
Yeah.
So he had to, like, explain it, basically. But, like, Felicity brought it up multiple times, sort of thing. Like, so other characters are talking to him about it. So he's not the one who keeps being like, hey, by the way, I'm mad at Barry. Hey, did you know I'm mad at Barry? Hey, guys, let me tell you about how I'm mad at Barry. Like, he's just going along, like, trying to do his thing, and other characters are being like, hey, Sisko, what's up with you and Barry? Hey, Sisko. Hey, Sisko.
Yeah.
So they probably could have, you know, cut out some of those conversations.
Yeah.
And let Sisko's, like, silence speak for itself.
Yeah. And it just being a little awkward and kind of people, like, side-eyeing each other and being like, what's going on with those two? And just being like, I don't know, but I'm not touching that kind of thing. I feel like that at times would have been a little bit more powerful.
And it might have also been, like, now that I think about it, the references might have been in each different episode, so they might be bringing it up, assuming that some of the people who watch each show watch all the other shows. So, like, people who watch Arrow might not be watching The Flash, or people who watch, you know, whatever. So assume maybe just in case there are lapses in crossover audience or something.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. I didn't think of that. I just assumed that everyone would have watched all of the episodes. Like us.
I mean, they should be, but it's... Oh, yeah, one other thing randomly about Arrow that I was like, WTF, was when Renee was all like, boo metahumans. I was like, dude, there is a guy who wears magic rags on your team. What is your problem?
Yeah.
That made no sense. But we did get the nice shirtless Renee scene when he was doing his Oliver Queen impersonation. Yeah. Dude is ripped.
Yes.
Oh man. And Curtis fanboying over Sisko was adorable.
Yeah.
I love Curtis. I love it. And I love it when the nerdy characters get together. And then Felicity and Sisko got to rescue the team, and Mix, like, rescued by geeks.
Yes.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
And then also, one of my favorite moments before we wrap up was when, like, the whole group basically stops Barry from giving himself up.
Yeah, it was like, Mix basically like, I don't even like you, but this is a stupid idea.
Yeah, he's like, I don't even like you, but you're part of the crew, and you don't do that. Like, you don't let your crew
do stupid things.
So, I like that. That whole scene, like, Barry's basically like, you and what army? And then he turns around, like, the entire cast is standing there. This one. Like, I think Supergirl single-handedly could do it, but, you know. But I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there were a lot of really great moments. I just wish the whole thing had been a little more cohesive and had room to breathe a bit more.
The other thing of note, we found out the woman, we found out who the woman was that Martin Stein was seeing.
It's his daughter.
Yeah.
And he was planning to go back and fix the aberration, but then as he got to know her, decides not to, and he's making Jax keep the secret, so...
Because of course he is.
That's gonna come back and bite them in the butt.
Yeah. But she's great. Like, I love his daughter. She was so cool in this, the crossover episodes. I thought she was great.
And Caitlin is like, what is wrong with you? She's great. Like,
yeah. Yeah, but at least we found out who she is now. So when he told his past self to go and make up with his wife and treat her better, like, he really treated her better.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, dear. I'm a terrible person. Quick, let's move on. Right. I guess movie headlines, of which we only have two, but the first one is that we got the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 teaser trailer. So this was super adorable. Like, it's just... it's pretty much centered around Baby Groot, let's be real. And Baby Groot is all kinds of adorable. And, yeah. The one thing that kind of threw me off about this trailer is the fact that Gamora is barely in it, except for as a footnote to them finding out Star-Lord's feelings for her and Drax thinking it's hilarious that his secret has been outed, which otherwise Gamora, like, didn't feature in this trailer at all, which for me is really odd. Like, she was, you know, she's a fairly big character, she's a huge part of the team, and the fact that she's a footnote to a joke, or what they think is a joke, kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. But
yeah, and I think a lot of that is that you know, she's like the only woman.
Yeah,
maybe if they had a few more women on the team, it wouldn't be so noticeable.
Yeah, that's very, very true. But like, Baby Groot with his don't touch this button because it'll blow everything up immediately and you'll kill us all. And so what did I just say? And Groot's just like, I am Groot. It's like, no.
And then he runs away with the box.
And Rocket's just like, oh, that's not good.
So funny. We had to endure the horribleness that was 2016, but as a reward, we get Baby Groot.
Yeah, yeah. So, on the whole, when it was, like, focusing on Baby Groot and all of that stuff, I was like, this is adorable and excellent and really hilarious and all sorts. But, like, there are some, like, notes to it that have me concerned, but also Baby Groot.
I mean, is there any, like, there were other things besides Baby Groot? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, it was kind of... that sort of, yeah, Baby Groot's basically our focus.
Baby Groot. Yeah. Super cute.
Yeah.
Our other bit of news is just that we got a release date for the Aquaman movie, which is October 5th, 2018. So nearly 2 years from now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So it's not like we won't see him before then. He's going to be in the Justice League movie, which is November 2017, I think. So, yeah. We're going to see him as Aquaman in Justice League. But, yeah. I'm fairly excited for the Aquaman movie because, I don't know, Aquaman is a really interesting character. But I like Jason Momoa, so...
I do too. I'm just going to wait and see what they do with him in Justice League before I'm worried or excited or anything.
Yeah, that's also true. Ugh. But we have Wonder Woman before then.
Wonder Woman, get in my eyeballs!
Yeah, that's basically where I'm at right now. I'm like, I want Wonder Woman. Come on, bring me Wonder Woman. Soon. So soon. But that's it. No more other movie news anyway. Taking a break from Comic Corner because the crossover episodes needed a lot of our attention because it's always a big thing to cover when we have
your comic corner can be read the invasion arc of the comics.
That's true. It is actually a really good arc of the comics as well. So if you want to see how they differ between the two, and there aren't, like, massive differences, but it is actually a really interesting one, so I'll link to it in the show notes, so give it a read.
And it's only 3 issues, so it's not a huge commitment.
Yeah, so it's a fairly easy thing to read over. Feedback time! So, you guys were chatty since the last episode. I guess the first one I'm gonna bring up. So Stephanie Merrill left us a comment that basically said, "When you finally get the new app notification and internally shriek, 'Sorry, Hero Hype Podcast, you're getting paused so I can listen to Rewatchable.'"
I already called her on it on Rewatchable.
Oh, really? You're getting called out again. Because yeah. I'm like, thanks. Thanks, Stephanie.
Glad to see where your priorities are. Jeez, you'd rather listen to Buffy and Angel talk than superheroes. But it's okay, because I was on both of those episodes.
Yeah,
so she gets to listen to me all the time.
Yeah, laugh it up.
We also asked what you thought of the crossover, and we got a few tweets in response. Michaela said, "So was it just me, or did the skirt comment by Heatwave to Supergirl on The Flash this week piss anyone else off? Also, I get that Barry messed up big time and needs to own that, but Cisco is getting too intense for me."
Yeah. The skirt comment would have annoyed me if that wasn't something that Heatwave did to everyone. So he very much will take a comment that he knows will specifically piss that person off by finding a defining characteristic of them that they know that they're not gonna like, and he
like
does
Ray's haircut.
Yeah, like calling Ray haircut, and he knows that Ray doesn't like that, or initially it was gonna be something that really got his back up. And so it would have pissed me off if it wasn't a characteristic that had been very much defined up until this point, that that he does it specifically to annoy that person because he wants to get that reaction. And it also would have annoyed me more if when he was actually in trouble he stuck to it rather than basically just screeching Supergirl.
That was funny. He's like, "I'm never calling you that, Supergirl."
Yeah. So it would have, but no, because we've already had it established that Mick does that to annoy people.
And I don't think Mick is particularly sexist, because he's very supportive of Sarah, like, as their captain.
Yeah, and also likes asking Sarah about attractive women like the president.
That was amazing.
Is it just me, or is the president hot?
Also, in the Arrowverse, the president is now a woman of color. Can we appreciate that?
Yes, which is awesome.
Apparently, they had initially wanted to bring in Linda Carter, but the network said that was going to be too confusing with her on Supergirl as well, so that didn't pan out.
I mean, then the network is kind of stupid, because we've already had established that there are multiple people across all Earths. So there is a Cisco on, like, Earth 1 and Earth 2, and there's a Cisco. Like, there are multiple Ciscos, there are multiple other characters, so they exist in different universes. So it would also stand to reason that Linda Carter would exist in different universes as well.
But just your little trivia is that that was originally intended to be Linda Carter.
Yes. But also woman of color president.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah.
The government knows who Barry Allen is.
Yes.
That strikes me as something to be concerned about.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were just calling the guy in the glasses in the interviews. So I guess he never actually got a name, but I don't know if he told anyone else the Flash's identity, but there is somebody high up in the government who knows who the Flash is.
Yeah. So that could be that could be a problem at some point.
Yes. So I found that slightly concerning as well. Also about the crossover, Nerdy Geek says, "It was good. I enjoyed seeing everyone together, and Barry and Carr are the best together. Super friends forever."
Yeah.
Also hilarious with Cisco being like, "You've got a really nice universe here."
Yes. I mean, her apartment is pretty sweet.
I don't know how she pays for that thing with her job.
I don't know, maybe, like, the economy is better on that Earth than it is on ours. Who knows? Susan also left us a comment, said, I thought it was so fun, and they did great at trying to focus on the main group for each episode. Great job.
So I hope you guys aren't so bothered by the fact that we didn't love it as much.
Yeah, I mean, we did like it. That's not, it's not that we didn't like it, we just, you know, you criticize what you love.
I would say I liked it, I didn't love it.
Yeah.
I wanted to love it, and I ended up liking it.
Yeah. Anyway, question of the week. So, on the last episode, we asked you, what are you thankful for this year in superheroes? And we got a few answers!
Finally!
Exciting, yes. So, Anthony Siano said, I'm thankful for the Fortnite superhero week crossover. We finally get to see everyone work together, and a mini JLA.
Yeah, because we basically have our own Trinity now. We have Oliver, Barry, and Kara are the Arrowverse Trinity.
Yeah.
Which is actually quite fitting. Like, Oliver is Batman, Barry's... Was Barry Wonder Woman and Kara Superman?
I guess so.
I could also see Barry as Superman and Kara as Wonder Woman, yeah, either way.
That's very true.
But yeah, so we have our own little Trinity, which I love.
Yeah.
This is the best prank Sinatra at Steph S. Francis says, what am I thankful for? You guys, ob. The Wonder Woman trailer, everything Black Panther, Vixen season 2, Stephen Amell's abs. I'm going to amen everything on there.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
That sums it up quite well.
Yeah. And the last one we got from Emmy Foss, who said, Supergirl being Supergirl and just making my week every week.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah. Gonna have a heavy seconded.
I think Supergirl is my favorite show on TV right now. Like, definitely of the superhero shows, it's my favorite.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that. I'm actually really, really, really loving Supergirl. Though I will say, from, like, comic book adaptations, Lucifer's up there for me as well. Like, Lucifer's really good. It's actually a hell of a lot better than I was expecting it.
A hell of a lot. Ba-dum-ching.
Ba-dum-bum. Yeah. But it is. It's so good. And week after week, I just, like, am thoroughly enjoying it. So, yeah, it's right up there with Supergirl for me, to be honest.
All right. So, our question of the week this week is, in honor of the crossover, what is your ideal superhero crossover? So this could be anything. It could be comic books in the movies. It could be across the TV show. So if you want to see the Arrowverse crossover with the Marvel movies or what have you, it could be anything. So what is the crossover that you really want to see?
Hawkeye versus Green Arrow.
I mean, I really need to see Sarah and Alex now.
Yeah, that could be quite cool.
Captain America and James Olsen in the same room.
Just anyone interacting to the Arrow versus version of Superman.
Oh my god, put Henry Cavill and Tyler Hoechlin in the same room.
They just be like looking at each other like, what? How? How is that me?
Oh, we didn't mention that we got the Brandon Routh reference.
Oh, oh my god, that reference was so good. She looks like my cousin.
Yes. People were wondering if they would go there, and they finally did.
They did, and I loved it. That was hilarious. I was actually, like, laughing pretty hard when we got to that bit. Especially because up until that point, like, Felicity was like, god, we look, like, alike. It's really weird. And then he makes that comment, and Felicity looks at him and is like, you realize we were, like, together at one point, right? Awkward.
I did not even take it that way at all. Okay.
Did you not catch the bit where Felicity, like, said something along the lines of, like, she looks a little bit like me.
I did not remember that at all.
Oh, I think I watched the episode, the Legends episode yesterday, and I'm sure I remember hearing her saying something like that, and then it was almost immediately followed up by him saying, like, she looks like my cousin, and Felicity gives him this really weird look to be like, dude.
I mean, that would not even remotely cross my mind with the whole Brandon Routh being Superman thing, so that's where the that was the only joke I took from that.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and rewatch the scene again, because I'm pretty sure that's what happened. And it was...
If that was in there, I did not hear it.
Okay. I'll go back and see if, like, I was just imagining it. But I'm pretty sure that that happened. But anyway, yes, it was a hilarious joke, and I loved it.
Yes, so send us your ideal superhero crossovers, and we'll read them on our next episode.
Until then, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll be right back here for all the mid-season finales. So see you soon, guys. Bye.
Bye.